and welcome. It is Eric Erickson. Delighted to have you with me today. It is 6 after the hour. Let's get going. The phone number is 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. Get me on social media at EW Erickson. You can go to EWErickson.com as well every day. Get show notes, get recipes, find out where I am, listen to the live stream, all that stuff. My thanks for those of you listening in Tyler, Texas, putting up with me this week. I'm delighted to be there, and I hope I have kept you company this week on the radio in Tyler. Now, we got to move on to all the other stuff that I wanted to get to in the last hour and did not. Packing the courts. That's right. The Democrats, they've produced this legislation. And, you know, poor old Hank Johnson. I don't know who thought it was a good idea to make Hank Johnson the front man for packing the Supreme Court. Has anyone told him it might tip over if you put more people in the Supreme Court? Hank Johnson is the Georgia congressman who, in a question with a Navy admiral, was concerned that if you put too many people on Guam, since it's an island, it could tip over. Oh, I'm not making that up.
And about 24 miles, if I recall, long. So 24 miles long, about 7 miles wide at the least widest place on the island, and about 12 miles wide on the widest part of the island. And I don't know how many square miles that is. Do you happen to know?
I don't have that figure with me, sir. I can certainly supply it to you if you'd like.
Yeah, my fear is that the whole island will become so overly populated that it will tip over and capsize.
We don't anticipate that. The Guam population, I think, currently about 175,000. And again, with 8,000 Marines and their families, it's an addition of about 25,000 more into the population.
The whole island will become so overly populated that it will tip over and capsize.
We don't anticipate that.
Congress. Now, if you think that's bad, just consider he replaced Cynthia McKinney. Remember her, that idiot? Yes, Hank Johnson was afraid if you added more people to Guam, it could capsize, it could tip over. The admiral deserved another medal for sitting through that with a straight face. This is a member of Congress who believed the island would tip over if you added too many more people to it. He's now the voice of House Democrats wanting to pack the Supreme Court. Has anybody suggested to him that if you add more members, it could tip the court over?
The real outlier is the fact that the court hasn't changed while the rest of the federal government has grown, keeping pace with the growth of the nation. Many of the earlier changes in the number of justices were made specifically in response to national growth. In 1807, for example, a Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals was added when Kentucky, Tennessee, and Ohio were added to the Union, and a new justice was added to the Supreme Court, bringing the total number of justices to 7. But this natural expansion stopped after the Civil War, leaving us today with the historical oddity of 13 circuit courts of appeal and only 9 justices. I believe it's time to go back to this tradition and have at least 13 justices. with 13 justices. Each justice would be able to have responsibility for emergency applications for a single circuit instead of the current status quo where one justice covers three circuits, two justices cover two, and the remaining six justices cover one.
Okie dokie. You know, we settled on the nine justices of the Supreme Court in the mid-1800s, where it has stayed. You got to love the logic of these people. You add more people to an island, it's going to tip over. You add more people to the Supreme Court. Oh, yeah, it's just fine. This is where they're headed. I want to play you a clip by Nancy Pelosi. By the way, you should understand, and, you know, we're all doubtful about the polling these days, but if ever there was a poll to pay attention to, it's the fact that it is really, really bad for the Democrats to pack the Supreme Court. No, there's lots of polling out there on this. Notice the media doesn't cover it because the polling is really bad for the Democrats on the idea of packing the Supreme Court. Even Democrats are opposed. The wokes love it. Here's before I play Pelosi, because there's a point to make about Pelosi. This is Justice Breyer again on the issue.
Nor should we be surprised if proposals for structural change of the court become a topic of general public concern. If the public sees judges as politicians in robes, its confidence in the courts and in the rule of law itself can only diminish. Diminishing the court's power, including its power to act as a check on other branches.
That was Justice Breyer yet again opposed to the idea. Now we got to play this Nancy Pelosi clip because you gotta know something that's happening.
Do you support Jerry Nadler's bill to expand the Supreme Court by four seats? And would you commit to bringing that bill to the floor?
No. I support the president's commission to study such a proposal. Frankly, I'm not right now. We're back. Our members, our committees are working. We're building the putting together the infrastructure bill and the rest. I don't know if that's a good idea or a bad idea. I think it's an idea that should be considered. And I think the president's taking the right approach to have a commission to study such a thing. It's a big step. It's not out of the question. It has been done before.
She's not going to bring it to the floor. All of this bluster, she's not going to bring it to the floor. She says she has no plans to bring it to the floor. Pelosi said Democrats are focused on passing Biden's infrastructure package. She backs the president's commission to study reforms on the Supreme Court. It's not out of the question, she said. It's been done before. The growth of our country, the size of the country, the growth of the challenges in terms of the economy might necessitate such a thing, but I've got no plans to bring it to the floor. Progressives are livid at Nancy Pelosi, even as Jen Psaki of the White House dangles hope.
Can I ask a follow-up on the court packing bill?
Sure.
So the president is not ruling out the possibility of expanding the court, and he has started this process that could lead to those to recommendations to expand the number of seats on the Supreme Court, right?
So I think that's getting a little bit ahead of the process. This is a commission that has officials who are many very progressive, many very conservative, have a range of viewpoints. They're going to look at a number of issues. The size of the court is one of the issues, but there are a number of other issues they'll look at. I'm sure the president will look forward to reviewing that report when it comes to his desk, and then I'm sure it will impact his thinking moving forward. But we don't know what that report will look like, and he obviously can still make the decision about what he supports.
But he hasn't taken the idea off the table, so isn't it a fair inference that he is open to the idea of expanding the size of the court?
Well, he's spoken to the issue in the past during the campaign. His position has not changed. However, he believes that it was important to look at a range of issues related to the court, given at times the politicization of the court, and that is what he has asked this commission to do.
Let's just be honest here. Joe Biden is a creature, longtime creature of Washington, D.C. He knows that commissions are where ideas go to die. It's like, so the House is pushing forward with a reparations bill, and the moderating proposal of some of the Democrats is to form a commission. And so the legislation Pelosi has allowed on the floor is to form a commission. Commissions are where the bold ideas of Washington always go to die. What's so interesting here is that Pelosi is a progressive. Nancy Pelosi is a progressive. Nancy Pelosi is on the left. Nancy Pelosi represents one of the most liberal districts in the country. But Pelosi also likes power, and she does remember the last time they stretched out and just tried to grab hold of power and use it. She was relegated to the minority for a number of years with Paul Ryan becoming speaker after they rammed through Obamacare. So what she's doing now is she's allowing commissions to study the issues, temper them with time, let things cool down, so she can get back to the business of being in power. Now, the Democrats have a greater propensity than Republicans of using power when they're in charge to advance their agenda, even if it hurts them. But this is Pelosi's last turn. Pelosi is old. She knows it. She's over 80 years old. She would like to hold on to power a little while longer than just this one more term. And it's probably not going to happen. She sees the redistricting on the walls. She knows the progressives can't help themselves. They're back to defunding police now. I don't know if y'all saw this. Joe Scarborough had a heated argument with the head of the DCCC because the DCCC would not denounce the idea of defunding the police. And Joe Scarborough on MSNBC is very adamant that the Democrats are going to hurt themselves if they don't go out and say they're going to defund the police. In an appearance on Morning Joe, Sean Patrick Maloney, the chairman of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, was pressed by Scarborough repeatedly about Democratic messaging on the issue of defunding the police. Maloney at the time refused to back down. And Scarborough pushed back. It's not a question my argument is, what are you doing about racial justice? Our party is going to do something. Scarborough pushed back. It's not the question I'm asking. It's the question Republicans will continue to ask. Do Democrats support defunding the police even headed into 2021 and 2022? The answer is no, Maloney responded. Are you asking the question and you're repeating Republican talking points for reasons I don't know? Scarborough reminded him the Democratic message from 2020 became defund the police. I'll tell you why I'm repeating it. Because you all did such a damn poor job of answering that, such a poor job of answering socialism questions, such a poor job of answering cancel culture questions. That's why I'm repeating it, because if you believe Kevin McCarthy should be Speaker of the House, keep pretending that none of this happened and keep saying the House did a good job in 2020 when they didn't. House Democrats did a poor job. So my question is, are you going into 2022 with your eyes wide open? He responded that the party holds the leadership and can learn from 2020 and said the answer to the question is that Kevin McCarthy is the majority leader and we hold the gavel. Joe. The Democrats are still in denial. Pelosi sees what's going on. I mean, say what you will about Nancy Pelosi, you don't get to be Speaker of the House without understanding politics. And she understands politics. And she understands there's a problem, and that's why she's all of a sudden in favor of commissions. Notice, for the last 20 years, the Democrats haven't been forming commissions. Haven't been forming commissions to study this sort of stuff. Suddenly they're having to. Why? Because they understand they've got to humor the progressives, but can no longer govern as progressively as the progressives want. Obamacare taught them that lesson, swept them out to power, put the Republicans back in charge. Now they're scared. They saw 2020. They thought they had a big wave coming, and they nearly got wiped out by cancel culture and defund the police. The fact that the head of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee doesn't realize it, and Nancy Pelosi does, shows they got some serious problems. She knows what's coming. I don't think the rest of them do. She's been there long enough to see it happen. Remember in 1994 when the Republicans took back the House? 40 years the Democrats had held the House of Representatives. Nobody saw it coming. And then it's been really freaking hard to get rid of the Republicans in the majority ever since. And they've got a redistricting wave upon them now. They don't have Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act to stop them. They'll have state court actions in some places, like Pennsylvania trying to rein in the Republican redistricting. In most states, they won't. In Texas, Georgia, North Carolina, and Florida, Republicans will be able to control 90 seats alone in the House of Representatives. The Republicans will be able to control the majority of seats in Congress from a redistricting perspective. All the belly aching about gerrymandering from the Democrats, they're about to gerrymander New York and Maryland to try to pad the score because of what Republicans are going to do in Republican states. They see it coming and they can't help themselves. They can't stop the wokes. The wokes think that they are culturally dominant and everyone agrees with them. They're in for a very rude awakening. Voters are getting mad as hell at cancel culture wokes. Hello there. Welcome back. The phone number is 877-97-ERIC. 877-973-7425. I got to remind you that it's E-R-I-C-K. So I was at a restaurant the other night eating. Why else would you be at a restaurant? I had not had lunch or dinner. Was sitting at a bar. People kept coming up and introducing themselves. They were kindly moved me into the kitchen so I could finally finish my meal in peace. But while I was sitting at the bar, the bartender's name was Eric with an E-R-I-C. And then he said, we got two other Erics in here. We got the E-R-I-K and we got the E-R-I-C-H. So we had like the entire plethora of Erics in one location at one time. Clearly a sign of the apocalypse. All of us. The E-R-I-C-H, though. It had to be a German guy. All right. We must roll on. The border wall is becoming a thing. The administration of Joe Biden actually is considering finishing the border wall. Nearly 3 months into office, Joe Biden's administration is using eminent domain to seize land near the southern border, fueling fears the government will continue building one of the most enduring symbols of Donald Trump's presidency, the border wall. This week, the U.S. government seized 6 acres from a family in Hidalgo County, Texas, the result of a Trump-era court case designed to help construct the border wall. The Biden administration never withdrew from or asked to dismiss the case, according to documents and interviews. Administration officials said they didn't do so because they're still in the midst of a review of federal resources used to build the wall. But that review, which was put into place through a proclamation Biden signed on his first day in office, was supposed to be finished by March 20th, and officials have offered no timetable for its completion. I'm very disappointed in Joe Biden. I thought he was a man of his word, but apparently he's not keeping his word. Ronaldo Anzaldúa Cavazo, a member of the family whose land was taken, told Politico. He said, not one more foot of wall and no land forfeitures. We took him at his word. We want him to keep his word. Despite Biden's promise to quickly reverse Trump administration policies, he has yet to act on many of them, from failing to increase the cap on refugees to rescinding a ban on most migrants at the southern border, but fewer issues carry as much symbolic weight as the border wall. And his actions there further threaten to complicate his pledge to offer a kinder, gentler immigration system where everyone is welcome. They can have all the excuses they want, but it's really dicey to look at what they're doing right now, said a person who consults with the White House on immigration policy who's grown frustrated. It's a lot of stuff Trump was doing. Trump completed more than 400 miles of a wall along the southern border before he left office. Now, you know what's really happening here? It's that the media has overwhelmingly realized it can't avoid talking about the disaster at the border, that Biden has made it worse. And so now what they're doing is say, look, he's doing the border wall. He's keeping that Trump policy around. You've got leftist opinion writers, the Washington Post, saying, hey, the one thing Trump did is he kept the border from being overwhelmed. So now they got to say, look, Biden's doing the border wall. He's doing the, calm down, people. Stop writing critically. He's doing something. He's embracing the policy they all hated, the border wall. It'll be the Trump border wall, though, not the Biden border wall. He can't rearrange stuff. Trump, it was so iconic with Trump. He's not going to be able to take credit for the wall. Welcome. It is Eric Erickson here. The phone number, if you wish to be a part of the program, 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. So every day I sit down, I get up in the morning, I start reading the headlines, I put a lot of stuff in before I go to bed. I get up, the first thing I do is I go through the audio clips of stuff that's buzzing around and make sure I get the clips of stuff I might want to talk about, and then kind of build the news around and outline the show, form a little outline, all the stuff I always taught when I started filling in for Rush Limbaugh. One of the things that a lot of the guest hosts would do is you kind of write down all the stuff you want to talk about in the order you want to talk about them. And then about an hour before the show, Snerdly would call and you would go through everything with him. So he had an idea of what you were going to talk about to get relevant phone calls and shoo people away, unless it was Friday. And then it was open line Friday so people could call. And then inevitably to this day, I will go off the outline and talk about stuff that's not in the outline. And I'm going to do that again. Recruitment of candidates matters. So let's take, for example, in Texas, beloved Beto, the skateboarding, F-bomb dropping congressman. The Democrats loved him. They loved him against Ted Cruz. They loved a man with such white privilege. He beat out a Hispanic Democrat and got into Congress, and they loved him. The man of white privilege whose father was able to get him out of a DUI, they loved him. What was it, a hit and run, something like that? They loved him when he ran against Ted Cruz, and then he had the audacity to get into the Democratic primary for president, and suddenly they turned on him. He wasn't a great candidate. On and on it goes. Remember Valerie Jarrett, the supposed to spy. She ran some awesome commercial. Or there was Sandra Fluck. Remember Sandra Fluck? That's not funny. Shouldn't bring that one up. She ran for Congress. Valerie Jarrett ran for Congress. All the celebrity Democrats, they run for Congress and they fall on their face. The left goes gaga for some of them. They fall on their face. People on the right do this too. They gravitate towards candidates who turn out to be just general idiots. And the Trump supporters out there are in payback mode, understandably so in some cases, and they're trying to find candidates within Republican primaries to run against people who maybe voted against Trump. Like, I mean, look at the pressure against Liz Cheney, who's probably going to win re-election in Wyoming. Matt Gaetz helped screw that up for the Trump campaign. All the people rallying around Matt Gaetz, and now they're suddenly signed. By the way, that is one reason why I treat as credible the allegations against Matt Gaetz. The fact that nobody on the Republican side, including the Trump team, the Trump family, none of them are saying anything nice about Matt Gaetz. That's a pretty big freaking red flag. There's a there that they're not defending him. But in Georgia, one of the things that the Trump supporters are doing is they're mad as hell at all the state Republicans. They blame them for losing Georgia. Georgia was not stolen, contrary to what people claim. The Dominion voter system machines were not hacking the vote and throwing it away. There was a statewide recount. The hand ballots matched the machines. In fact, the machines were more accurate than the hand count. But there's this anger over what happened in Georgia. So the lieutenant governor, Jeff Duncan, is not going to run again. Brad Raffensperger, the secretary of state, he's already got challengers coming after him. He may not run again. The one person who is going to run again is Brian Kemp, the governor of Georgia. And the Republican Trump supporters, they found a candidate to run against him, Vernon Jones. You may recall, wherever you are in the nation, Vernon Jones was the black Democrat state legislator in Georgia who the Democrats disowned for backing Donald Trump. He now wants to run for governor. Years ago, he started bragging that one day he would run for governor. Now he is. He's running as a Republican, not a Democrat. Vernon Jones, well, he's got a lot of baggage that these president supporters probably should have known about, including one big issue that maybe they weren't aware of at the time. Democrats have vowed to use the vote to defeat Republicans in 2020. State Representative Vernon Jones, a Democrat from Lithonia, said enough Republicans might lose to shift power in the state house. If your members vote for this bill in 2020, your party loses, Jones said. There's going to be a new Speaker of the House here. If there's a new Speaker of the House, many in your party will lose power. All of you will lose your chairmanships. If you all lose based on this bill, this body is going to change over. What piece of legislation was Vernon Jones opposed to? What piece of legislation did Vernon Jones think would be bad for Republicans? What piece of legislation did Vernon Jones think would hurt the Republican Party enough to hand it to the Democrats? The fetal heartbeat legislation. The pro-life legislation that would ban abortion when a fetal heartbeat is detected. Vernon Jones, who is the Trump supporters candidate for the Republican Party in Georgia, is pro-abortion. Now, last week, he came out with a statement that he believes life begins at conception and is pro-life. Just a year ago, he supported pro-abortionists and rallied with Planned Parenthood to stop the most pro-life piece of legislation to ever pass the Georgia legislature. We see this pattern around the country of opportunists, and a lot of people don't recognize or they lack discernment to be able to discern the candidates. They get so enraged and so emotional that so-and-so spited them that they're going to go back somebody who's actually a terrible candidate with a lot of baggage. In Georgia, we're seeing that. But you've seen this around the country. This rush to back people because you've got an emotional response against the other side. You got to have some level of discernment here. You will notice President Trump has not come out aggressively for Vernon Jones. He's not endorsed him yet. The announcement only made, I will be surprised actually if Donald Trump comes out and endorses him. But around the country, if the Trump supporters out there want to find people, they need to find good candidates without a lot of baggage. And there are plenty to find. There are plenty of pro-Trump candidates you can find to run in primaries, but you got to win the primary too. And a lot of people, they're just not engaged enough politically. They're not astute enough to how to win these primaries. I was talking to a friend of mine the other day. He's running for a seat. Let me explain this to you. I've done this before. Let me just do very basic campaigning 101. Let's say you're running for, I don't know, mayor. You want to run for mayor. Wherever you live in the United States, and you're listening to me right now, you want to run. Actually, you know what? Forget that. Let's make it even easier. You want to run for a council seat on your county commission. Let's say you want to do that. You want to run for a county commission seat on your county. Now, if you're new to politics, what do you think you need to do? I bet you think you need to go knock on people's doors, and you would be right. The question is, whose doors do you knock on? Because you could be knocking on a Democrat's door, and you're a Republican, and you can make them mad and make them want to go vote for you. Or even worse than that, you could be knocking on the door of someone who isn't registered to vote. What you got to do is from your Secretary of State and in your state, whether you're listening in Oregon or Missouri or Texas or Georgia or Iowa or Florida, your Secretary of State maintains a voter file. And that voter file can tell you who lives in each house and whether they vote. Now, it can't tell you whether they're Republican or Democrat, but it can tell you if they vote. It can tell you if they vote in Republican primaries or Democratic primaries. Because you got to choose a ballot. When you go into the primary, you got to say, I want the Republican ballot or I want the Democratic ballot. and they log that. So they can't tell you who they vote for. But if they're going into primaries, and every primary they're going into a Republican primary, you know that person's a Republican. And if you're a Republican and you're running against a Democrat, the odds are they're going to vote for you. So you want to knock on that guy's door. You don't want to knock on the Democrat's door. You sure as heck don't want to knock on the door of the guy who's never going to vote. You're wasting your time. But also, there's a thing. It's called down ballot fall off. You're running for county commission, which means you're at the bottom of the ballot, not the top, which means a lot of people who vote for president or senator or governor or statewide offices, they're going to get to county commission and they're going to be done voting. Well, I voted for all the people who count. They're not going to vote for you. So at the top of the ballot, you may, from your area, may generate 10,000 votes. And by the time it gets down to the county commission race that you're in, only 5,000 people have hung around to vote. A 50% fall off. So you got to find the people who vote, and also you got to find how many people actually vote for mayor, so or for county commission. So you got to go to your local board of elections, and you got to say, give me the list of precincts in my county and the population of those precincts and the percentage. And then you got to go through and you got to find, okay, the last time this county commission seat was up for a vote, how many people actually voted in each of these precincts? So you can find, well, there are 1,000 people in this precinct, but only 750 votes were cast in the county commission race. Well, then you know that if you got 750 people who voted in the county commission race, if you can find 400 people, knock on the doors of that precinct and find 400 people to say they'll vote for you, you're going to win that precinct. It's data. It's data. You got to use the data. But then there's something else you got to do. A buddy of mine texted me. I was going to get to this point, I promise. You can't just knock on doors and say, hey, I'm Eric Erickson. I'm running for county commission seat one. You got to give them, one, an excuse to vote for you, but two, you got to give them an excuse to fire the other guy. What's your excuse? Why are you running? Yeah, I'm running because Billy Bob didn't vote. He voted to put in driver's license cameras. It's an invasion of privacy. And if you put me there, I'll get rid of the driver's license cameras that are taking pictures of you at stoplights. A lot of people are pissed off at those stoplights. I don't blame them. I hate the red light cameras. They should be banned in every state. So you make that an issue. You vote for me, I'll ban those cameras Billy Bob put in. You vote for me, I'll build the highway he's dragging his feet on. You vote for me, I'll make sure we rezone so those big box stores don't sprout up next to your neighborhood. He's in the tank for big business. You knock on the doors of the people you know are going to vote. You knock on the doors of the people who are Republicans. Better yet, you phone bank them first to find out what issue they care about locally. You can probably win. But a lot of people think, and this is the problem, and this is where I'm headed with this, with, for example, the Trump supporters wanting to settle scores in primaries, they think that they can just jump in and say, I'm running against this person because they're bad. They don't support my guy, so I don't support them. And that's going to get you some votes. That's going to get you some votes, but it's not going to get you enough. And there's a problem. There's another problem. Let's say you're the dog that actually catches the car. What do you do when you catch the car? You beat the SOB you hate because you ran against the guy who wasn't sufficiently loyal to Trump. You beat him in the primary. Now you're the candidate. You're the nominee. What do you do? You've got to give people a reason to vote for you. You can't just vote against the other person. I've told this story before. It's worth telling again. When I was at CNN, I got to know Paul Begala, who was a Clinton strategist. He's a Democrat partisan. It's kind of funny growing up. He was the bad guy. We disagree on everything, but I get along perfectly fine with him. He actually told me a great, very illustrative story of this. When Clinton was running in 96, Ann Richards, who had been the governor of Texas, she was beaten by George W. Bush. She called Bill Clinton and said, Bill, you're going to lose. She's the woman who saw, poor George, he was born with a silver foot in his mouth. She's a darling of the left. I mean, she's been dead for years, and she's like the saint for left-wing politics. Her daughter ran Planned Parenthood. But Ann Richards told Bill Clinton in the 90s he was going to lose because he was so focused on what he had done, he ignored what he was going to do. When you run for office, you got to tell people what you're going to do. You know, one of the reasons Republicans lost the runoff in Georgia was because Republicans so internalized that the Democrats were going to steal it. 427,205 Republicans didn't show up. John Ossoff in Georgia, the new senator from Georgia, beat the incumbent David Perdue by 52,000 votes. 427,205 Republicans refused to show up. Three quarters of them said they weren't going to show up because it was going to be stolen anyway. Well, had that fourth quarter of them shown up, David Perdue would have won. The Republicans would have kept the Senate. Do you know why they didn't show up? They said that Perdue hadn't given them a compelling reason to vote for him. It was all about anti-Ossoff. Well, if you knew Ossoff, you would understand why you wanted to be anti-Ossoff. We'll get to see him for 6 years now because 427,000 Republicans gave up and didn't go vote. But a quarter of them, they just wanted a reason to go vote. You got to give people a reason to vote for you. You can't just say, well, I'm going to run against that guy because he's an SOB. And you should vote for me because you should be anti him. Well, people want to be for you. And if you get people to vote for you, give them a reason other than I'm going to defeat that guy. I'm going to do X, Y, and Z. Tell them what X is, Y is, and Z is. They'll probably go for you, but you got to give them the excuse. And too often right now in our politics, people are like, I hate that guy. I'm going to beat him. I hate him. He didn't stand with me. He didn't stand with my guy. I'm going to beat him. You're going to, well, some people will do that. A good portion of people will do that, but it probably isn't enough. You identify the voters. You identify who you need to reach out to. You identify a message, and part of that message is, why me, not him? And it can't just be because that guy's a jerk. It's got to be something positive. People want some hopeful message that you're going to do something good for them. So if you can give them that and not just say, well, that guy was disloyal to my guy, so I'm going to run against him, you might just win. But the campaign fundamentals matter. Identify the voters who are going to vote. Identify the ones you think you can persuade, make contact with them, and give them a pro-you message. And in being pro-you makes the case they need to fire the other guy. Don't make it all about the other guy. Show that you're going to be better. And if you do that, you may just win. That's how politics actually works. That's why so many people who get pissed off and want to run because they hate the other side lose, because you're just not giving people a reason to actually vote for them. Have y'all seen this video? This is making its way around social media. It's a Nest camera, or no, it's a Vivint home camera system. So this guy, he's carrying food. I don't quite understand exactly what's going on here. He's carrying food somewhere, and his wife, she gets attacked by a bobcat. She's carrying an animal. A bobcat. Where did this bobcat come from? She's between two cars. She's got a cat in a carrier. And, oh my gosh, a bobcat comes up behind her and tries to get into the cat carrier. The husband pulls the bobcat off the way. He's literally having a fist fight with a bobcat. He's in the yard. Oh, he threw the bobcat. Body slammed the bobcat. And now he's pulled out his gun. He's chasing the bobcat in a neighborhood. This is incredible. This is like 46 seconds of madness, this thing. So his wife comes out. She's got a cat in a cat carrier. I don't know where she's going with the cat. He's trying to put a cake or something in the back of his car, opens the car door. Here, he's unlocking the car. He's got the cake. He's putting the cake in the back seat. Here comes the wife. She's got the car. She screams. Here comes a bobcat charging her, trying to climb up her back. He goes over, grabs the bobcat off his wife's back. He's in a fist fight. The bobcat's reaching out, trying to claw his face. He's got it at arm's length, shaking it, throws it. Body slams the bobcat. Oh, the bobcat charges and now takes off under the car after he pulls out his gun. This is incredible. This is making the rounds all over the internet. I mean, this is the home camera security systems that live stream on the web now give us some of the greatest play-by-play in America. Have y'all seen the one with the snake where you, the security camera alarm goes off and you see the snake come down and wrap up around it. It's incredible. This modern age of live streaming your webcams at home is just crazy. Of course, occasionally up in Canada, yet another person pulled a Tubin and sat down. It was a member of parliament, sat down naked. We say, for those of you not in the South, we say naked. For those of us in the South, he was naked on camera, member of parliament, live streamed on Zoom for everyone to see in all of his glory. Good gracious. When will people learn to just put tape over the camera? Did Jeffrey Toobin teach us nothing? All right, we'll be back. This Bobcat, I'm amazed. I'm going to retweet it. You can follow me on Twitter, EW Erickson, and see it.